You are now listening to Jess is Lit on CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting from the unceded territories of the Musqueam people at the University of British Columbia. Welcome to Jess is Lit. The school year has finally started. Today was Imagine Day, and so I hope everyone came along to school on campus to experience Imagine Day and to interact with new people and clubs. There's a whole bunch of people and clubs lined up alongside the UBC campus, and so please check them out. They were great. I myself did it as well with a couple of my friends, and so I hope everyone took that to their advantage. It is a beautiful day out today in Vancouver, BC. But today is another exciting day where we will continue on with the metamorphosis. We just stopped last episode with chapter 2. We are starting chapter 3 today, and so we will get on that. But before we start, I have a couple of ads, PSAs, and show promos, and so we will get through those first and then move on with the readings. So we'll be right back with those. Here we go.
The question is, Pilate, you remember Pilate from the New Testament?
Pontius Pilate, he fiddled while...
just a minute. Let me ask the question, then you can give me the answer, okay? Did Pilate want Jesus to be crucified?
Pontius Pilate washed his hands of it.
So did he want him to be crucified?
Yeah.
No. No. No.
Well, tune in every Friday afternoon, 3:30 to the Nightwatch Show on Sunya!
Well, find a good church. It'll help you.
Knock, knock. Guess who? MRG Live coming right back at you. This time with a whole new list of upcoming live shows by your favorite artists. Hear this. Marika Hackman, Faye Webster, Empress of, Peter Cat Recording Co., and The Rare Occasions are a few of the artists MRG Live is bringing to you. Follow at MRG Live Official on Instagram to stay tuned with all the artists performing near you.
What a lovely Vancouver summer night. I can't wait to sit by myself at the beach and look at my phone. Huh? What's that?
Man, what are you doing? Get over here and come jam.
Wow, what a lovely assortment of musicians. What are you guys doing?
This is E-Studio. We come together and build connections over music. No musical experience needed. Just come socialize and build your confidence playing music if that's your thing.
Wow, this is so awesome. Now I have a real-life connections with Vancouver's international community of musicians and creatives. Thank you, E-Studio. E-Studio is an international jam group where we celebrate music from all around the world and play together. Follow us on Instagram at estudio.cafe. estudio.cafe.
Enjoy bluegrass and old-time music, please join up and become a member of the Bluegrass Music Association of Canada, the BMAC. With your membership, you'll receive a quarterly full-color Bluegrass Canada magazine, as well as have access to the Bluegrass Canada website. Your membership will also allow you to contribute to the nomination process of the Canadian Bluegrass Music Hall of Fame. Help BMAC promote bluegrass artists with up-to-date information, including band members, performance locations, and helpful advice for bands wishing to travel to the USA. And finally, it will allow you to access information for festivals and events across Canada, bluegrass radio listings, organization partnerships, and a resource library for all things bluegrass. To learn more, log on to bluegrasscanada.org or call Mike Higgins at membership at 905-567-4708.
Welcome back to Jess's Lit. Those were some ads, show promos, and PSAs. Now, in between the readings, I will play some songs. I was thinking about playing them at a random pace. Or not necessarily pace, but just choosing random artists. But I realized that we haven't gone over all of the songs from Vern Chichu. And so we will get through those first. And then I will choose random artists in between the readings. So today, in between the readings, it will be Vern Chichu's songs. We have Love Me Tonight, Make Your Feeling Right, and All I Want Is Home for now. And so those will play in the little breaks we take when we get a bit tired of reading. But we will start on chapter 3, and without wasting any more time, we will get right into it. The serious injury done to Gregor, which disabled him for more than a month, the apple went on sticking in his body as a visible reminder, since no one ventured to move it, seemed to have made even his father recollect that Gregor was a member of the family, despite his present unfortunate and repulsive shape, and ought not to be treated as an enemy. That, on the contrary, family duty required the suppression of disgust and the exercise of patience, nothing but patience. And although his injury had impaired, probably forever, his powers of movement, and for the time being it took him long, long minutes to creep across his room like an old invalid. There was no question now of crawling up the wall, yet in his own opinion he was sufficiently compensated for his worsening of his condition by the fact that toward evening in the living room door, which he used to watch intently for an hour or two beforehand, was always thrown open, so that lying in the darkness of his room, invisible to the family, he could see them all at the lamp-lit table and listen to their talk, by general consent, as it were, very different from his earlier eavesdropping. True, their intercourse lacked the lively character of former times, which he had always called to mind with a certain wistfulness in the small hotel bedrooms where he had been wont to throw himself down, tired out on damp bedding. They were now mostly very silent. Soon after supper, his father would fall asleep in his armchair. His mother and sister would admonish each other to be silent. His mother, bending low over the lamp, stitched at fine sewing for an underwear firm. His sister, who had taken a job as a salesgirl, was learning shorthand and French in the evenings on the chance of bettering herself. Sometimes his father woke up, and as if quite unaware that he had been sleeping, said to his mother, "What a lot of sewing you're doing today!" and at once fell asleep again, while the two women exchanged a tired smile. With a kind of mulishness, his father persisted in keeping his uniform on, even in the house. His dressing gown hung uselessly on his peg, and he slept fully dressed where he sat, as if he were ready for service at any moment, and even here only at the back and call of his superior. As a result, his uniform, which was not brand new to start with, began to look dirty, despite all the loving care of the mother and sister to keep it clean, and Gregor often spent whole evenings gazing at the many greasy spots on the garment, gleaming with gold buttons always in a high state of polish, in which the old man sat sleeping in extreme discomfort, and yet quite peacefully. As soon as the clock struck 10, his mother tried to rouse his father with gentle words, and to persuade him after that to get into bed, for sitting there he could not have a proper sleep, and that was what he needed most, since he had to go on duty at 6. We will stop right there and play some tunes. So, you know, at this moment, the injuries Gregor has experienced, the family seems to be feeling bad about it, but again, they also seem to be kind of just going on with their own lives, and it seems to me that they have accepted just this whole situation of Gregor's metamorphosis, and it's a sad situation, but I could sort of see them trying to cope with it. And not at the same time. It's a bit complicated right now. But Gregor is, in fact, in deep distress. And so we will just hope to see what happens. But in the meantime, we'll take a little break. This song is called Love Me Tonight from Vern Chichu. So we'll be right back after this. Here we go.
She walked into the bar, only low one said, with the long brown hair and her blue jeans skin tan. I just couldn't believe my eyes as she moved from side to side. Oh, she looks so fine, I think I'm gonna lose my mind. But baby, baby, love me tonight, and everything will be alright. I'll even drink your wine, anything you want, just let me love you tonight. I want every move, everything she did. Just the want and the need to get the job on the side. I just couldn't believe my eyes when she moved from side to side. Oh, she looks so fine, I think I'm gonna lose my mind. Oh, baby, baby, love me tonight, and everything will be alright. I'll drink the wine, do everything you want, just let me love you tonight.
That was Love Me Tonight from Vern Chichu. Now we'll get right into the readings. But with the mulishness that had obsessed him since he became a bank messenger, he always insisted on staying longer at the table, although he regularly fell asleep again, and in the end, only with the greatest trouble could he be got out of his armchair and into his bed. However, insistently, Gregor's mother and sister kept urging him with gentle reminders. He would go on slowly shaking his head for a quarter of an hour, keeping his eyes shut, and refused to get to his feet. The mother plucked at his sleeve, whispering endearments in his ear. The sister left her lessons to come to her mother's help, but Gregor's father was not to be caught. He would only sink down deeper in his chair. Not until the two women hoisted him up by the armpits did he open his eyes and look at them both, one after the other, usually with the remark, "This is the life. This is the peace and quiet of my old age." And leaning on the two of them, he would heave himself up with difficulty, as if he were a great burden to himself, suffer them to lead him as far as the door, and then wave them off and go on alone, while the mother abandoned her needlework and the sister her pen in order to run after him and help him farther. Who could find time in this overworked and tired out family to bother about Gregor more than was absolutely needful? The household was reduced more and more, the servant girl was turned off, the gigantic bony charwoman with white hair flying around her head came in morning and evening to do the rough work, Anything else was done by Gregor's mother, as well as great piles of sewing. Even various family ornaments, which his mother and sister used to wear with pride at parties and celebrations, had to be sold, as Gregor discovered of an evening from hearing them all discuss the prices obtained. But what they lamented most was the fact that they could not leave the flat, which was much too big for their present circumstances, because they could not think of any way to shift Gregor. Yet Gregor saw well enough that consideration for him was not the main difficulty preventing the removal, for they could have easily shifted him in some suitable box with a few air holes in it. What really kept them from moving into another flat was rather their own complete hopelessness and the belief that they had been singled out for a misfortune such as had never happened to any of their relations or acquaintances. They fulfilled to the uttermost that the world demands of poor people. The father fetched breakfast for the small clerks in the bank. The mother devoted her energy to making underwear for strangers. The sister trotted to and fro behind the counter at the behest of customers. But more than this, they had not the strength to do. And the wound in Gregor's back began to nag at him afresh when his mother and sister, after getting his father into bed, came back again, left their work lying, drew close to each other, and sat cheek by cheek. When his mother, pointed toward his room, said, "Shut that door now, Gret," and he was left again in darkness, while the next door the woman mingled their tears or perhaps sat dry-eyed, staring at the table. Gregor hardly slept at all by night or by day. He was often haunted by the idea that next time the door opened, he would take the family's affairs in hand, again, just as he used to. Once more, after this long interval, there appeared in his thoughts the figures of the chief and the chief clerk, the commercial travelers and the apprentices, the porter who was so dull-witted, two or three friends in other firms, a chambermaid in one of the rural hotels, a sweet and fleeting memory, a cashier in a milliner's shop, whom he had wooed earnestly but too slowly. They all appeared together with strangers or people he had quite forgotten, but instead of helping him and his family, they were one and all unapproachable, and he was glad when they vanished. At other times, he would not be in the mood to bother about his family. He was only filled with rage at the way they were neglecting him, and although he had no clear idea of what he might care to eat, he would make plans for getting into the larder to take the food that was after all his due, even if he were not hungry. His sister no longer took thought to bring him what might especially please him. But in the morning and at noon, before she went to business, hurriedly pushed into his room with her foot any food that was available, and in the evening cleared it out again with one sweep of the broom, heedless of whether it had been merely tasted, or, as most frequently happened, left untouched. The cleaning of his room, which she now did always in the evenings, could now have been more hastily done. Streaks of dirt stretched along the walls, here and there lay balls of dust and filth. At first, Gregor used to station himself in some particularly filthy corner when his sister arrived, in order to reproach her with it, so to speak. But he could have sat there for weeks without getting her to make any improvement. She could see the dirt as well as he did, but she had simply made up her mind to leave it alone. And yet, with a touchiness that was new to her, which seemed, anyhow, to have infected the whole family, she jealously guarded her claim to be the sole caretaker of Gregor's room. His mother once subjected his room to a thorough cleaning, which was achieved only by means of several buckets of water. All this dampness, of course, upset Gregor too, and he lay widespread, sulky and motionless on the sofa. But she was well punished for it. Hardly had his sister noticed the change aspect of his room that evening, that she rushed in high dudgeon into the living room and, despite the imploringly raised hands of her mother, burst into a storm of weeping, while her father had, of course, been startled out of his chair, looked on at first in helpless amazement. Then they, too, began to go into action. The father reproached the mother on his right for not having left the cleaning of Gregor's room to his sister, shrieked at the sister on his left that never again was she be allowed to clean Gregor's room, while the mother tried to pull the father into the bedroom. Since he was beyond himself with agitation, the sister, shaken with sobs, then beat upon the table with her small fists, and Gregor hissed loudly with rage because not one of them, thought of shutting the door to spare him such a spectacle and so much noise. Still, even if the sister, exhausted by her daily work, had grown tired of looking after Gregor as she did formerly, there was no need for his mother's intervention or for Gregor's being neglected at all. The chairwoman was there, this old widow, whose strong, bony frame had enabled her to survive the worst a long life could offer, by no means recoiled from Gregor. Without being the least curious, she had once by chance opened the door of his room, and at the sight of Gregor, who, taken by surprise, began to rush to and fro although no one was chasing him, merely stood there with her arms folded. From that time, she never failed to open his door for a little moment, morning and evening, to have a look at him. At first, she even used to call him to her, with words which apparently she took to be friendly, such as, "Come along, then, you old dung beetle," or, "Look at the old dung beetle, then." To such allocutions, Gregor made no answer but stayed motionless where he was, as if the door had never been opened. Instead of being allowed to disturb him, for senselessly, whenever the whim took her, she should rather have been ordered to clean out his room daily, that charwoman. Once early in the morning, heavy rain was lashing on the window panes, perhaps a sign that spring was on the way. Gregor was so exasperated when she began addressing him again that he ran at her, as if to attack her, although slowly and feebly enough. But the charwoman, instead of showing fright, merely lifted high a chair that happened to be beside the door, and as she stood there with her mouth wide open, it was clear that she meant to shut it only when she brought the chair down on Gregor's back. "So you're not coming any nearer?" she asked, as Gregor turned away again and quietly put the chair back into the corner. Gregor was now eating hardly anything. Only when he happened to pass the food laid out for him did he take a bite of something in his mouth as a pastime, kept it there for an hour at a time, and usually spat it out again. At first he thought it was chagrin over the state of his room that prevented him from eating, yet he soon got used to the various changes in his room. It has become a habit in the family to push into his room things there was no room for anywhere else. And there were plenty of these now, since one of the rooms had been let to three lodgers. These serious gentlemen, all three of them with full beards, as Gregor once observed through a crack in the door, had a passion for order, not only in their own room, but, since they were now members of the household, in all its arrangements, especially in the kitchen. Superfluous, not to say dirty, objects they could not bear. Besides, they had brought him most of the furnishings they needed. For this reason, many things could be dispensed with that it was no use trying to sell, but that should be thrown away either. All of them found their way into Gregor's room, the ash can likewise, and the kitchen garbage can. Anything that was not needed for the moment was simply flung into Gregor's room by the charwoman, who did everything in a hurry. Fortunately, Gregor usually saw only the object, whatever it was, and the hand that held it. Perhaps she intended to take the things away again as time and opportunity offered, or to collect them until she could throw them all out in a heap. But in fact, they just lay wherever she happened to throw them, except when Gregor pushed his way through the junk heap and shifted it somewhat, at first out of necessity, because he had not room enough to crawl. But later, with increasing enjoyment, although after such excursions, being sad and weary to death, he would lie motionless for hours. And since the lodgers often ate their supper at home in the common living room, the living room door stayed shut many an evening. Yet Gregor reconciled himself quite easily to the shutting of the door, for often enough on evenings, When it was opened, he had disregarded it entirely and lain in the darkest corner of his room, quite unnoticed by the family. But on occasion, the charwoman left the door open a little, and it stayed ajar even when the lodgers came in for supper and the lamp was lit. They set themselves at the top end of the table where formerly Gregor and his father and mother had eaten their meals, unfolded their napkins, and took knife and fork at hand. At once his mother appeared in the other doorway with a dish of meat, and close behind her was his sister with a dish of potatoes piled up high. The food steamed with a thick vapor. The lodgers bent over the food set before them, as if to scrutinize it before eating. In fact, the man in the middle, who seemed to pass for an authority with the other two, cut a piece of meat as if it laid on the dish, obviously to discover it were tender or should be sent back into the kitchen. He showed satisfaction, and Gregor's mother and sister, who had been watching anxiously, breathed freely and began to smile. The family itself took its meals in the kitchen. Nonetheless, Gregor's father came into the living room before going into the kitchen, and with one prolonged bow, cap in hand, made a round of the table. The lodgers all stood up and murmured something into their beards. When they were alone again, they ate their foods in almost complete silence. It seemed remarkable to Gregor that among the various noises coming from the table, he could always distinguish the sound of their masticating teeth, as if this were a sign to Gregor that one needed teeth in order to eat, and that with toothless jaws, even of the finest making, make, one could do nothing. "I'm hungry enough," said Gregor sadly to himself, "but not for that kind of food. How these lodgers are stuffing themselves, and here I am dying of starvation." Now, we will take another quick break, and the next song playing is called "Make Your Feeling Right" by Vern Chichu again. We'll be right back after this. Here we go.
Sitting here in the morning sun, thinking about you all alone. I can almost see your pretty face. I can feel your warm embrace. Tell me about those lonely nights when you lay there feeling cold as ice. How those nights seem oh so long. Tell me how you wish that you were home. Baby, I love you in the morning sun. Baby, I love you when the storms are gone. Baby, I'll hold you when you're cold at night. Baby, I'll make your feeling right. Sitting here early in the morning sun, hanging about gone. I can almost see your smiling face. Maybe I feel your warm embrace. Maybe I love you in the morning sun. Maybe I love you when the storms have gone. Baby, I'll hold you when you're cold at night. Baby, I'll make your feet light. Baby, I'll love you in the morning.
Baby, I'll hold you when you're cold and mad. Baby, I'll make your feeling right. Baby, I'll make your feeling.
Welcome back to Jess is Lit. That was Make Your Feeling Right from Vern Chichu. Now we'll get right back into the readings. On that very evening, during the whole of his time, there Gregor could not remember ever having heard the violin. The sound of violin playing from the kitchen. The lodgers had already finished their supper. The one in the middle had brought out a newspaper and given the other two a page apiece. And now they were leaning back at ease, reading and smoking. When the violin began to play, they pricked up their ears, got to their feet, and went on tiptoe to the hall door, where they stood huddled together. Their movements must have been heard in the kitchen, for Gregor's father called out, "Is this the violin playing disturbing you, gentlemen? It can be stopped at once." "On the contrary," said the middle lodger, "could not Fraulein Samsa come and play in this room beside us, where it is much more convenient and comfortable?" "Oh, certainly," cried Gregor's father, as if he were the violin player. The lodgers came back into the living room and waited. Presently, Gregor's father arrived with the music stand, his mother carrying the music and his sister with the violin. His sister quietly made everything ready to start playing. His parents, who had never let rooms before and so had an exaggerated idea of the courtesy due to lodgers, did not venture to sit down on their own chairs. His father leaned against the door, the right hand thrust between two buttons of his livery coat, which was formally buttoned up, but his mother was offered a chair by one of the lodgers, and, since she left the chair just where he had happened to put it, sat down in a corner one side. Gregor's sister began to play. The father and mother, from either side, intently watched the movements of her hands. Gregor, attracted by the playing, ventured to move forward a little until his head was actually inside the living room. He felt hardly any surprise at his growing lack of consideration for the others. There had been a time when he prided himself on being considerate, and yet just on this occasion he had more reason than ever to hide himself. Since owing to the amount of dust that lay thick in his room and rose into the air at the slightest movement, he, too, was covered with dust. Fluff and hair and remnants of food trailed with him, caught on his back and along his sides. His indifference to everything was much too great for him to turn on his back and scrape himself clean on the carpet, as once he had done several times a day. And in spite of his condition, no shame deterred him from ever advancing a little over the spotless floor of the living room. To be sure, no one was aware of him. The family was entirely absorbed in the violin playing. The lodgers, however, who first of all had stationed themselves, hands in pockets, much too close behind the music stand, so that they could all have read the music, which must have bothered his sister, had soon retreated to the window, half whispering with down-bent heads, and stayed there while his father turned an anxious eye on them. Indeed, they were making it more than obvious that they had been disappointed in their expectation of hearing a good or enjoyable violin playing, that they had more enough of the performance, and only out of courtesy suffered a continued disturbance of their peace. From the way they all kept blowing the smoke of their cigars high in the air through nose and mouth, one could divine their irritation. And yet Gregor's sister was playing so beautifully. Her face leaned sideways, intently and sadly her eyes followed the notes of music. Gregor crawled a little farther forward and lowered his head to the ground so that it might be possible for his eyes to meet hers. Was he an animal, that music had such an effect upon him? He felt as if the way were opening before him to the unknown nourishment he craved. He was determined to push forward till he reached his sister, to pull at her skirt, and so let her know that she was to come into his room with her violin, for no one here appreciated her playing as if he would appreciate it. He would never let her out of his room, at least not so long as he lived, his frightful appearance would become for the first time useful to him. He would watch all the doors of his room at once and spit at intruders, but his sister should need no constraint. She should stay with him of her own free will. She should sit beside him on the sofa, bend down her ear to him, and hear him confide that he had had the firm intention of sending her to the conservatorium, and that, but for his mishap, last Christmas, surely Christmas was long past, he would have announced it to everybody without allowing a single objection. After this confession, his sister would be so touched that she would burst into tears, and Gregor would then raise himself to the shoulder and kiss her on the neck, which, now that she went to business, she kept free of any ribbon or collar. "Mr. Samsa," cried the middle lodger to Gregor's father, and pointed without wasting any more words at Gregor, now working himself slowly forward. The violin fell silent. The middle lodger first smiled to his friends with a shake of his head, and then looked at Gregor again. Instead of driving Gregor out, his father seemed to think it more needful to begin by soothing down the lodgers, although they were not at all agitated and apparently found Gregor more entertaining than the violin playing. He hurried toward them and, spreading out his arms, tried to urge them back into their own room and at the same time to block their view of Gregor. They now began to be really a little angry. One could not tell whether because of the old man's behavior or because it had just dawned on them that all unwittingly they had such a neighbor as Gregor next door. They demanded explanations of his father. They waved their arms like him, tugged uneasily at their beards, and only with reluctance backed toward their room. Meanwhile, Gregor's sister, who stood there as if lost when her playing was so abruptly broken off, came to life again, pulled herself together all at once after standing for a while holding violin, and bowed nervelessly, hanging hands and staring at her music, pushed her violin into the lap of her mother, who was still sitting in her chair fighting asthmatically for breath, and ran into the lodger's room, for which they were now being shepherded by her father rather more quickly than before. One could see the pillows and blankets on the beds, flying under her accustomed fingers and being laid in order. Before the lodgers had actually reached their room, she had finished making the beds and slipped out. The old man seemed once more to be so possessed by his mulish self-assertiveness that he was forgetting all the respect he should show to his lodgers. He kept driving them on and driving them on until in the very door of the bedroom in the middle, the lodger stamped his foot loudly on the floor and so brought him to a halt. "I beg to announce," said the lodger, lifting one hand and looking also at Gregor's mother and sister, "that because of the disgusting conditions prevailing in this household and family," here he spat on the ground with emphatic brevity, "I give you notice on the spot. Naturally, I won't pay you a penny for the days I have lived here. On the contrary, I shall consider bringing an action for damages against you, based on claims, believe me, that will be easily susceptible of proof." He seized and stared straight in front of him, as if he expected something. In fact, his two friends at once rushed into the breach with these words, "And we too give notice on the spot." On that, he seized the door handle and shut the door with a slam. Gregor's father, groping with his hands, staggered forward and fell into his chair. It looked as if he were stretching himself there for his ordinary evening nap, but the marked jerkings of his head, which were as if uncontrollable, showed that he was far from asleep. Gregor had simply stayed quiet all the time on the spot where the lodgers had espied him. Disappointment at the failure of his plan, perhaps also the weakness arising from extreme hunger, made it impossible for him to move. He feared, with a fair degree of certainty, that at any moment the general tension would discharge itself in a combined attack upon him, and he lay waiting. He did not react even to the noise made by the violin, as if it fell off his mother's lap from under her trembling fingers and gave out a resonant note. Now, we will take a quick break and play the last song of the day. It will be called All I Want Is Home. Here we go.
I sit here at home, sitting all alone, thinking about the way that it should be. Where are you tonight? What are you doing instead? I've been home here with me. You said there'd be times when things would be hard. I never think they'd be this way. You're up every night. Come home and we cry. Then I had to cry myself to sleep.
All I Want Is Home from Vern Chichu. Now, I think we only have time to read a couple more paragraphs, and so we'll get right into it. My dear parents, said his sister, slapping her hand on the table by way of introduction, things can't go on like this. Perhaps you don't realize that, but I do. I won't utter my brother's name in the presence of this creature, and so all I say is, we must try to get rid of it. We have tried to look after it, and to put up with it as far as is humanly possible, and I don't think anyone could reproach us in the slightest. She is more than right, said Gregor's father to himself. His mother, who was still choking for lack of breath, began to cough hollowly into her hand with a wild look in her eyes. His sister rushed over to her and held her forehead. His father's thoughts seemed to have lost their vagueness at Gret's words. He sat more upright, fingering a service cap that lay along among the plates still lying on the table from the lodger's supper, and from time to time looked at the still form of Gregor. We must try to get rid of it, his sister now said explicitly to her father, since her mother was coughing too much to hear a word. It will be the death of both of you. I can see that coming. When one has to work as hard as we do, all of us, one can't stand this continual torment at home on top of it. At least I can't stand it any longer. and she burst into such a passion of sobbing that her tears dropped on her mother's face, where she wiped them off mechanically. "My dear," said the old man sympathetically and with evident understanding, "but what can we do?" Gregor's sister merely shrugged her shoulders to indicate the feeling of helplessness that had now overmastered her during her weeping fit and contrast her former confidence. "If he could understand us," said her father, half-questioningly. Gret, still sobbing, vehemently waved a hand to show how unthinkable that was. "If he could understand us," repeated the old man, shutting his eyes to consider his daughter's conviction that understanding was impossible, "then perhaps we might come to some agreement with him. But as it is..." And we will stop right there. Now it's getting a bit intense here with the family, and Gregor's sister, I guess specifically, was advocating for a change to happen, but the change being Gregor getting, in a sense, kicked out of the house. Stick along with my future readings to figure out what happens, but it is getting kind of dirty in my sense. And I feel really bad for Gregor. You know, what kind of sin did he do or commit? He just turned into a bug and now he's just facing all these burdens and hardships. But at the end of the story, we'll just have like a brief moment where we kind of discuss the big picture of this. And so, you know, as long as we finish the story, then we'll kind of have a grasp of what this story might mean in a deeper sense, a philosophical sense. And so, but for today, we will stop there. Thank you for tuning in to one of my readings again. Again, like I mentioned before in my previous episodes, I keep Will, but if you guys have any recommendations for future readings or songs, artists, anyone, or anything that relates to literature, please let me know, because I am more than happy to go over it with you guys. I had a really fun time with the song series thingy that I did beforehand, and this reading thing, I'm getting a lot of good feedbacks, and I also find this really, really fun. And so please let me know. We will come back again next week with the continuation of the Metamorphosis. But for those of you who, you know, had no time to join in, we just read a big portion of Chapter 3 of the Metamorphosis by Franz Kafka. And so we will continue on with our next episode. But anyways, I hope all UBC students got a chance to check out Imagine Day. It was a big thing going on with a lot of clubs and people out there on campus. And for anyone who goes to other universities or colleges or high school, the school year has officially started. And so I hope you guys persevere and stay focused and achieve all of your goals and intentions for the new semester and new school year. It was a pleasure to be on the show again right now. And yeah, that's basically it. Take advantage of the beautiful weather here. Luckily, we didn't get any rain today. But other than that, I will see you guys again next week with the continuation of the readings. Have yourselves a fabulous evening, and I will see you guys next week. Thank you all. Bye-bye.